Listener advisory. The following program contains adult themes and adult language. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. To mark International Women's Day, we'll hear again a classic and very funny talk by Dr. Jocelyn Elders, plus some talking and singing by assorted middle-aged white males. I hope you'll stay tuned. Here in Darkest Connecticut, we have just finished celebrating International Women's Day. Or more accurately, we have just finished ignoring International Women's Day. Even Groundhog Day got more publicity this year, and that had to compete with the alleged Super Bowl. I myself was oblivious to International Women's Day until the night of March 7, when I saw Google had a little graphic on it. I try to avoid Google because it treats internet users the way Massey Coal Company treats West Virginia. But give the devil his or her due. When my wife came home from work, I asked if anybody had celebrated International Women's Day by giving her a nice raise, or at least a box of chocolates. I couldn't describe the look she gave me, and I'm an English professor. Satire is a tricky tool. Don't send any your spouse's way right after work. In honor of the day, I'm going to replay parts of a program we originally broadcast in September 2009. It's titled, What Does Woman Want? That's a quote from Freud. Not only do I not have the answer, I don't even know if the question makes any sense. But the show features a nice talk by a woman I've come to admire greatly, Dr. Jocelyn Elders, who was Surgeon General of the United States back in the Clinton administration. The original broadcast ended with a song touching on some women's issues by James McMurtry. We'll replay a bit of that if time permits today. McMurtry suggests that you can't really get a handle on women's issues unless you're willing to use a word that is never used in polite conversation. The word starts with a C. Capitalism. There, I've said it. Now, on with the show. Never a show to duck the tough questions. Today, New World Notes takes on the big one. As Freud phrased the question, what does woman want? I love that way of putting it. Note the capital W on woman and the singular. What does woman want? As though womankind were a real definable thing with a corresponding Platonic ideal, not just a sloppy and ill-defined general category that maybe does as much good as harm. I mean, look, when we look at the Pentagon or the U.S. Senate, do we find ourselves asking, what does idiot want? Of course not. We say, what do these idiots want? But somehow, what does woman want seems almost a sensible question. There's an old joke. A child explains why his parents' marriage isn't working well. The kid says, they're so close in age, but of completely different sexes. If you like that joke, better tell it now, because I don't think it'll make any sense 10 years from now. Like the late lamented old joke, what's black and white and red all over? A newspaper. Now my son asks, why black and white? My grandchildren will ask, what's a newspaper? Even changing the punchline to, a nun falling down the stairs, doesn't always work. One kid asked me, what's a nun? And he was Catholic. But to return to women. Let's say that a man loves the woman who has been his wife for, say, 7 years. But to every husband there comes a moment of wonder, not anger, when he finds himself staring at his wife and thinking, what manner of creature is this? From what planet does she hail? Are there others like her walking amongst us? The novelist John Updike was a good minor poet. Many decades back, my first wife gave me a volume of Updike's poems, a nice little book that has survived much longer than our marriage did. One of the poems beautifully captures those moments when a husband suddenly feels amazement at the ineluctable, did I just say that word? Amazement at the ineluctable otherness of the other. I'm going to read a short four-line stanza. Lines 3 and 4 are my favorite in this poem. You slip in and out of beauty and imply that nothing is wrong. Who sent you? What is your assignment? And here, capturing the same feeling, is a 10-line section titled In the Tub. The poet sees his wife bathing. You are a pond mirroring pink clouds. There is moss where your white roots meet. When you lift your arm to shave, you are a younger kind of tree. Silver, you rise from the lead. Your swan arm seeks a towel. Magic has taken place because my Excalibur razor is dull. And the water would boil a man. Hey, not bad for a dead white male, eh? So from a cosmic perspective, the question, what does woman want, is a good one, in a philosophical way. Sort of like, does God exist? If you like that sort of thing. I doubt that any woman could compose a clear answer to, what does woman want? And I'm sure no man could. So much for philosophy. On a concrete, practical level, we can indeed discuss what specific things various groups of individual women want. Better still, let's hear them discuss it. To start, here is Dr. Jocelyn Elders, an African-American woman, Surgeon General of the United States, 1993 to 1994, under Clinton. She's addressing members of Sister Song, an organization of women of color, mostly young, concerned with women's health, particularly reproductive health. As Surgeon General, Elders was a strong advocate of making good health care available to all, of comprehensive health education in schools, and of reconsidering the so-called war on drugs. As such sane, sensible, helpful, and money-saving ideas have no place on Capitol Hill, Elders found her views detested by most of the Republicans in Congress and by 40% of the Democrats. Here's what finally did her in. In a question-and-answer period following a speech, she was asked if perhaps sex education courses in schools should discuss the subject of masturbation. I've heard an audio recording of the Q&A. Here is my summary of the very guarded reply that she gave. Masturbation is a normal aspect of human sexuality, and in general, more knowledge is always better than less knowledge. Pretty scandalous, huh? Masturbation is a normal aspect of human sexuality, and in general, more knowledge is always better than less knowledge. The Republican chorus of rabid hyenas grabbed this tidbit and started shrieking and howling. Elders advocates teaching masturbation in schools, they shouted. As though Elders had called for practical homework and weekly co-ed labs. Displaying his customary integrity, Clinton fired her. In this talk from early 2008, Elders, still practically forced to wear a scarlet M on her chest, felt obligated to bring up the topic. Very humorously, I might add, at the end of this 11-minute excerpt. What does this woman want, and assume her audience wants? Oh, horrible, un-American things, like more and better health education for all, including education in sexual health. Universal aspect to health care, including care of sexual health. Easy access to contraception. Less incarceration of men of color. Every child planned and wanted. Recognition that sex is mainly about pleasure. And sane and honest public health policies, which, for example, would rule out abstinence-only sex education. You know, socialist crap like that. Imagine! Here's Jocelyn Elders.
I know I was up talking and preaching and talking about what we needed to have comprehensive health education in our schools from kindergarten through 12th grade. And I was told by those people that represent you. Say, Dr. Elders, our children don't need that. Well, I knew I was losing an awful lot of my bright young sisters to poverty, ignorance, and enslavement because they weren't being able to be taught about how to protect their bodies and what to do. You know, instead, you know, everybody talked about those girls out there getting pregnant. And then, you know, every time I think about this, Senator Taylor, I get mad all over. Yeah, well, you know, the fact that we wouldn't pay for birth control pills for years, and we're out there, first thing, paying for Viagra. I wonder who in the world did we think we need Viagra for? We're sexual beings. From the time we're born until we die. And we need to make sure that we understand our sexuality and realize that sex is about more than procreation. You know, men walk around and they all, from the time they're born or go into puberty until they die, they're out trying to procreate. And we as women spend half our life trying not to get pregnant. So we need to know how to protect ourselves. But more importantly, we always remember the three P's of sexuality. First of all, one P is procreation. That's just a tiny little bit. The second is we need to protect ourselves and our partners from disease or unplanned pregnancies or whatever. But third is that big P. That pleasure piece. Sex is about pleasure. 99.9% of sex is for pleasure. And I was on a plane with a whole lot of men, and we were talking about that. I was going to talk to some college students. We were talking about sex, and I was telling them about that, and I told them about the three P's, and I said 99.9% is about pleasure. He said, Dr. Elders, you didn't put enough nines on that. But, you know, it's supposed to be pleasure for us, too. And if we are worrying about getting pregnant, worrying about getting disease, well, you're right, we're so stressed out until we can't even have much pleasure. So let's make sure that we understand how we can protect us and don't let the men have all the pleasure. We've got to have some. In the first part of this century, we're going to have 21 million women to face the terrible threes. I've even passed the terrible threes. But the terrible threes are midlife, menopause, and divorce. And you know an awful lot. We know very little about menopause. Just think, if men went into menopause, we'd know everything there was to know. So, but they don't even know whether we should take hormones yet or not. So, we've got to be involved and we've got to decide about our sexual health. Not, we know about our sex, we know we're males or females, or we know about our gender sex, our biological sex. But we want to know about, and our sexuality is, you know, kind of who we are and how we feel and what's going on and all that kind of good stuff. But we want to be sexually healthy. That's what we've got to worry, start thinking about. And what do we have to do and what do we have to know to be sexually healthy? And we've got a huge unfinished agenda out there. And you've got to help make a difference. You've got to be the transformational leaders that's going to make a difference for the 21st century. We've been silent too long. And it's time that we all began to stand up. And one of the big problems is it starts with education. It's education, education, education. You can't keep ignorant people healthy. And you know the most common cause of poverty in the world? As you know, I heard this morning they was talking about children. I want everybody to have as many children as they want. If they want 20, have 20. But I want every child that's born in the world to be planned and wanted. And I don't, you know, if you have planned, wanted children, we wouldn't have all this sexual abuse that's going on. We wouldn't have all the rape that's going on. We wouldn't have kids, you know, Senator Taylor was talking about people dropping out of school. See, they'll give you percents and say 14% of us, only 14% of us drop out of school. Well, that's a lie. That's if you start with high school. An awful lot of them drop out before they even get to high school. So when you get down to it, 49%, if you go back to the birth weight records, it's 49% of our young men. And this is a problem. We've got more bright young men sitting in prison than we've got in college. And who in the world, all these beautiful young women out there, going to marry to get to bother their children? We sometimes we have to, in order to find a decent man, we have to, you can't go to college, you have to go to the prisons. If you don't, they aren't in prisons, you have to go to the graveyard because so many of them have been killed and gone. So we've got to think of all of those things. And we've got problems, you know, we talk about sexual health. We've got problems related to health in general. We're the richest country in the world. 5% of the population, 25% of the wealth of the world. And we said that we can't afford to provide universal access to health care. And who do you think this affects the most? Bright, young, beautiful women like you and your children. These are the people that are most affected by not having universal access to health care. We've got problems related to sexuality. You know, I'm so thrilled that our teenage pregnancy has gone down. I've even had people tell me, oh, well, Dr. Elders, you know, those girls just want to have babies so they can get a welfare check. You may have never heard it, but I did. I know you hear it. Well, the reason, have you ever known anybody to get rich on a welfare check? $600 a month. I'm saying it's just absolutely ridiculous. What we need to be doing is looking at how can we provide the things we need to prevent this problem. It's an awful lot easier to prevent a pregnancy than to take, trying to take care of the baby. And people always sit around and talk about, I say, our legislators don't know but one A word. You know, we have abstinence only and abortion. Those are the only A words they know. And I tell them all the time, listen, you don't have to worry about abortions. If you prevent an unplanned pregnancy, there has never been a need for an abortion, as I never knew a woman who needed an abortion that was not already pregnant. So let's wake up and get real. So we've got to prevent pregnancy, and we start out with education and teaching our young people how to take care of themselves. You know, when I was talking about the A, B, C, D of AIDS prevention, I said abstinence, be faithful, C, use a latex condom. They said, oh, Dr. Elders, those condoms will break. I said, you're right, condoms will break. But I can assure you that the vows of abstinence break far more easily than those latex condoms. So we've got to be real about what's going on out there. And do what we need to do. And of course, I got fired over this do other things. But... the administration now talked about the ABC of AIDS prevention. in Africa, you know, and all the, these wonderful things, of course, that, you know, the whole government got involved, and they provided condoms. They were on billboards. They were everywhere. And they, you know, but they said, oh, it was just abstinence only. Well, but you know, we're, as I said, we're sexual beings, and we have a hormonal imperative, and we can't get over it. God made us like that. But, you know, what the D was to do other things. Right, right. And then someone asked me about masturbation. And I said, well, you know, I said, we don't teach our children even regular health, you know, health, comprehensive health education. And I think that that masturbation is a normal part of human sexuality. The one thing you have to know is I heard someone talking in the room today. It says, it never got anybody pregnant. Won't make hair grow in your hands. You won't go blind. And you know you're having sex with somebody you love.
The unedifying fake outrage at elders and then her firing by Clinton naturally caught the attention of the leading social satirists of the 1990s, the band The Four Men. They thought that we do not have enough slang terms for masturbation. Whacking off, choking the chicken, spanking the monkey, stirring the clam sauce, and so on. Actually, I just made up the last one. Why should men get all the good euphemisms? If euphemism is the right word to describe a phrase like choking the chicken? Anyway, the Four Men here propose a new slang term that is both unisex and memorable. It is firing the Surgeon General.
You can't come in. I hear you knocking. You can't come in. I hear you knocking. You can't come in. 'Cause I'm firing the Surgeon General. You can't come in. I hear you knocking. You can't come in. I hear you knocking. You can't come in. 'Cause I'm firing the Surgeon General. I used to hog the dolphin, used to choke the chicken, used to spank the monkey, used to fool with the tool. I used to wig the bishop, used to wax the weasel.
But now I learned one they never taught in school.
You can't come in, I hear you knocking, but you can't come in. I hear you knocking, but you can't come in. 'Cause I'm firing the Surgeon General. I used to whack the bobbit, used to knead the noodle, used to charm the cobra, used to ponder pointillism. I used to free the willy, used to pat the Robertson.
Now I got me a new euphemism.
You can't come in, I hear you knocking, but you can't come in. I hear you knocking, but you can't come in. 'Cause I'm firing the Surgeon General.
Get phalluses, full of calluses. Go blind, lose my mind, be romantically disinclined. I used to think I'd never be mollified or qualified at allified. Go to work as a clerk, try to be anything but a jerk.
But now I wanna dance and shout. I'm jumping like a trouser trout.
'Cause I found a way to bat it and make a living at it. Yeah, I got into politics and I'm never coming. Never coming, I'm never coming out.
You can't come in. I hear you knocking, but you can't come in. I check the lock and say you can't come in. 'Cause I'm firing the Surgeon General. Firing the Surgeon General. Firing the Surgeon General.
Hey, there's not enough time to do justice to the second conversation I had promised. Let's postpone the pleasure and instead catch another song that's relevant to our topic, What Does Woman Want? First, let me say that New World Notes comes to you from WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. My selection from Jocelyn Elder's speech is rebroadcast with the kind permission of the National Radio Project and its radio program, Making Contact. Please visit this program's webpage, http://newworldnotes.blogspot.com. See you next week, I hope. Illigit to my non-carborundum, keep the faith, and enjoy the music. James McMurtry's Fireline Road.
My name is Alice Walker. They never told me why. I'm not named for anybody. It's just a name out of the sky they thought was pretty, I guess, way back when. I'll change it someday. I like to pretend I'm just a visitor here, like on one of those shows, in a house full of people I don't hardly know. But we'll all get to go home in a week or so, back to real life. And I'm picking up the carpet in the corner where I crash. I'm too tired to separate the pennies from the trash. And I don't guess it matters even why Jesus died. I can tell you about sins. We got this duplex up on Fireline Road. It's way out from town, so the rent's pretty low. Not much more than a cinder block cell, just like the one next door and the next one as well. And the bus don't run out here but three times a day. The 7-Eleven, it's a full mile away. And there's a car in the yard, mostly rust and dents. We moved here in it, but it hadn't run since. Forget my name, can you? Forget my face. Gonna lose myself. Finer places where I'll go. I'll leave no trace out on Fireline Road. There's a pile of daddy's quick picks scattered on the floor among the half-empty bottles. A chair against the door in case he comes home drinking. With loving on his mind, I never let it happen. But that don't stop him trying. My sister weren't so lucky. He got to her too soon. She never saw it coming. He knew just what to do to keep her silent. Swear to God I'll kill him if I can. Said she made him do it. After all, he's just a man. Forget my name. Forget my face.